5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. We have a liftoff.
Hey there, Earthlings. Welcome to another episode of The Danny Project, brought to you by Neo Abilities. I am your host, Tessa, and I hope you grab your aluminum hats because we're on another exploration into all things disability. If you enjoy what we're doing here on the podcast and would like to have access to some more exclusive content, please be sure to check us out and join the crew on Patreon.
Discovery, go at throttle up.
All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of The Danny Project. I am here with Jay. Jay, would you like to introduce yourself a bit? I know that we've met through rare disease mutual acquaintances, so would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you, Tessa, for taking the time out of your busy schedule to interview me. My name is Jay, and I'm coming to you today from Massachusetts, which I am thankful to be living in. I am a South Asian individual who was born here in the U.S. and I have a tracheostomy.
So what has your journey been like as a person with disability? What has your experiences been?
So some of my experiences with disability is, so let me just give you a brief description of my syndrome from my perspective. Mm-hmm. So obviously you already know that CCHS stands for congenital central hyperventilation syndrome. Mm-hmm. This syndrome affects the nervous system and affects the respiratory system of the body. Obviously, the patient does not breathe normally as well as an abled person can, like our parent or some of our friends can. And some of the other things that I may have forgot to mention is now some people may ventilate 24/7. Some people may ventilate only when they sleep or when they're sick and they need to go to sleep. That's when they have to ventilate. Also, right now, there are no cures for the syndrome, so very little research. Most people can live full and healthy lives, go to school, go to work. However, there are some financial challenges that come with the ability to work. As far as my experience, I've had CCHS since 1991. So pretty much since birth. And I am an only child in my family. And as a person with a disability, that can be a challenge because, you know, my parents are the main caretakers and my main supporters and my everything, you know? Mm-hmm. And I have lived with this my whole life. And one of the things that always comes to my mind is, you know, right now it's me and my parents. I mean, I always look to the future and say, what will happen to me 5 years down the road? Mm-hmm. What will happen? I also think about the social aspect, and this is where individuals like you and me may face social interaction problems. And what do I mean by that? I mean by social activity, being excluded from social activity because we have limitations. See, I am not able to do the social activities that other people can, like go to birthday parties, have sleepovers, etc., because of my disability. If traveling comes, then I need my ventilator when I go to sleep. You know, the only social activity that I sometimes do is I go to a temple with my parents. But in my case, because I work a full-time shift, I try not to force myself to go out after that because my parents understand that because of the health situation, because of the fact that I might get exhausted or I might be overworked or I might be tired, we try to avoid going out after certain time. And I say again, with friendships, when I was in school, I would be treated differently. My hope was to make friends and to be close to them so that I can gain that social activity, gain that social network. But all of that just changed. You know, people did not take me seriously. They treated me like a kid who just doesn't know how to quote unquote behave. Let's just say that. And that to me was one challenge. Mm-hmm. You know, before I did not know much about CCHS because I was too young to remember what it is. But I think it's very important that we think about who do we surround ourselves with? Do we surround ourselves with people who just think they will be a friend and then in the end it's just whatever? Or do we surround ourselves with people who understand us, who understand what it's like to live with a disability. And for me, I believe that the most important thing is to surround myself with people who understand about the challenges. I started to engage myself in the CCHS network. And in 2021, I started to be engaged with the Diverse Ability Leadership Collective. So I met different disabled individuals.
And I know you talked about the social components of it. And you said that there was financial considerations and burdens and stuff that come along with having this type of disability or condition. So what does that look like, and how does that play like a role in your life?
As I mentioned, I was born here in the U.S. Now, there are patients in India who have the syndrome. Now, for me, I am unable to travel abroad because of my need of the ventilator and the fact that the quality of healthcare that's in India, they may not be as good quality as you get good quality of healthcare here in the U.S. And I think the quality of the healthcare, you know, depending upon where you go, has to change so that it can be a good accommodation if a person like me wanted to travel. But unfortunately, I can't do that because the healthcare quality over there may not be as great. Even though my family, who I miss very much, that's the hard part about it, is when you can't go, you tend to think about your own family. That's one of the reasons why I love the U.S. is you get good healthcare here.
Mm-hmm. I know you said something too about being in the East Coast, and that is that part of why you appreciate being in the East Coast so much is because the quality of care is even better.
I don't know, because like I said, I've been living in Massachusetts pretty much my whole life. Mm-hmm. So far, the healthcare quality has been great. And the other aspect of disability is self-care. That's one of the setbacks I have, is that I don't have that ability to self-care by myself because I go on a ventilator at night and I need the help from my parents, you know, to put me on my ventilator when I go to sleep. Whereas in the other aspect, I'm unable to do certain things myself. But, you know, during the daytime, you know, I can self-care at work. I was able to self-care when I went to school. When I first started out with my education in college, you know, I would rely on my mom to pick me up, drop me off. And this was after I did my Associates of Science in Business. And then when I started to go to the next university to fulfill my two and a half more years, because it was four-year college. And I was doing as a transfer student. In the beginning, I relied on my mom. And then what she did is she taught me how to do certain things by myself, like take the bus. And that taught me how to be more responsible, how to kind of self-care, how to advocate for my own self and say, okay, I need to go from A to B. How do I go about doing that? What do I need to do? And how can I proceed moving forward? And then the other part of self-care is the fact that, you know, when it comes to medical supplies, I'm able to get that ordered right away by myself. I can make the phone call, call my respiratory company, and order the supplies I need myself. I don't have to ask my mom and dad to get, help me order the supplies. I'm able to look around and say, okay, what do I need? What do I need? What do I not need? When it comes to traveling, I'm able to figure out as to what I need to take. So I'm able to do those things. The only thing I'm not able to do by myself is hook myself up to the ventilator. And that's where I need the help.
Yeah. A lot of people, they might not be familiar with tranks or ventilators other than what they've heard through the pandemic. Can you explain that a little bit? As I'm sure that that also has like a financial component to it.
Yes, it does. And as you can see, I have a tracheostomy. So my tracheostomy is cuffed. So what happens is when I go to sleep, this needs to be inflated with a syringe. So up to a certain measurement, you take the syringe and then you take like a saline vial.
Okay.
You put a certain amount in the syringe, and then what happens is the water itself goes into the tracheostomy, into here, the balloon. And then inside, it forms like a ball-like thing. So you can squeeze and then feel the cuff. after you inflated, what happened is that I can't talk. I can't move my mouth.
Uh-huh. So it's like a balloon or something?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right.
Then the type of ventilator that I have is a Trilogy 100. I think that's 40 pounds. But the good part about the Trilogy is that it comes in a case. So I have no need to worry about lifting the ventilator itself.
Okay.
I can just carry the case onto my shoulders and, you know, wherever I need to go.
You know, with the pandemic, a lot of what we heard was that, you know, ventilators were becoming harder and harder to come by. I think we also heard that they were, like, very expensive for hospital staff to get. So what does that look like for an individual that needs one on a day-to-day basis?
You know, ventilators, you know, they do come at a financial, as a financial component. And they play mm-hmm. a financial component. And this really touches based on all this medical equipment and all of the supplies and ventilator. It all plays mm-hmm. a role when it comes to your healthcare insurance. So my insurance, we have a primary insurance, and then what we have is Medicare, and over here we have MassHealth.
Okay.
Three insurances. Now, the issue right now, what's happening right mm-hmm. now is, see, my mother, she works for the state, and the government is the one that determines what kind of insurance the state worker can have. So in the beginning, I had one primary insurance that lasted up until the mm-hmm. end of June of this year. And then once June hit, I had to look for another insurance. In the meantime, in the beginning of July, I got COVID. Mm-hmm. My symptoms were not as mild as other people might have. And during that time, I had to think about, okay, mm-hmm. my insurance will be ending. Mm-hmm. What will I do now? Because when you have one insurance, you have one group of doctors. But here's the thing. Once that insurance ends, then that's where the trouble is. We had to deal with new insurance. And mm-hmm. on top of that, because of that, we had to look for new doctors. Because my previous doctor and previous specialist, mm-hmm. they were not taking the new insurance.
Right, yeah. I hate when that happens.
Yeah, and the respiratory portion where they do my vent checks, I don't think they knew that my insurance had ended, or perhaps they did because mm-hmm. they could tell easily in my system, you know, they have records of all this stuff. And then once I hit my 31st birthday, we were hoping that my new primary insurance would be extended.
Yeah.
Because of my disability.
Yeah, yeah.
But that request was not accepted.
Okay.
And so I am left with Medicare and MassHealth.
Okay.
And so right now, what's happening is I am dealing with not only having to work with a new medical equipment company, but I am also having to wait for my new primary to get me a consultation so that I can be referred to the new company. And, the new pulmonologist at Reliant or at the hospital. So that's where the financial portion comes into play.
It sounds like when your insurance is disrupted, I mean, it totally shatters your foundation as a person with chronic illness or disabilities, right? Because you do have to find those new doctors, and you are, I mean, I know for myself, and please let me know, but whenever I've had to change and I get new medical equipment, I have to learn how to use it again, or it doesn't work the right way, or there's always different hurdles that come up with it as well.
And the other thing is, you know, it's a new one that I in particular am being rejected for because, you know, of the fact that I hit a new age, and so, you know, I have to wait for a referral so that I can, you know, continue on seeing my new pulmonologist and get a new respiratory nurse to come to my house and do my monthly vent checks. You know, I'm telling you, Tessa, it's really hard. And everything was going out great in the beginning. You know, I had no problems. Everything was nicely. And now it's like everything's changed. and it creates a burnout. And you know, the other thing is, now what we have to do is we are thinking of seeing a social worker, because this insurance stuff can't be going on forever. You know, I have to have a primary insurance. I mean, yes, I have Medicare, I have MassHealth, but there has to be a first before my second and next one come into play. Even though I have a disability, there's no reason for me to be rejected to continue with the new primary health care. I believe strongly that no disabled person's health insurance should have to end at a certain time. It should be unlimited. When it comes to us, you know, it's like we're being cast aside. You know, that's not something that should happen. That really causes, mm-hmm. that's really a shame.
It's like society in general is not investing in you enough to support you, right, through insurance, whatever that may be, right? Obamacare or Medicaid, Medicare, primary, whatever it may be. And then you have to think about, like, all the things you're expected to do, or you're not expected to do, right? You're not expected to go to college as a disabled person. But if you want to have a successful career, if you want to be able to support yourself, it's one of the main ways to be able to do that, right? So it's that health part. If you don't have your health, then it's really hard to have a whole lot else.
Yeah. And nobody should have to choose between their health insurance and their lives, okay? I believe that both should be treated equally. There should be no, should I go with no insurance or should I just drop the bucket? There's no need for that.
Yeah, well, and there's all the socioeconomic factors, you know, right, where we're talking about a population that has a harder time getting education for multiple reasons. We have a population who faces a lot of biases and oppression and has a harder time getting an appointment. And so when we have a $65 bill, that's a big deal for a lot of people who are disabled, because you're like you said, you're going to have to choose between paying that bill or buying food or medical supplies.
So after I got my bachelor's, I was put into a job, and this was a business job, and it was for an insurance company. And I would be working 8 hours sitting down looking at a computer. And I did not do well. I was hospitalized, and that really affected my body. So we had to apply for Social Security, and we have tried multiple times. I kept getting rejected. And so we basically had to appeal and find lawyers to help me get to represent me in a case where I should be eligible for SSDI, because although I might be able to work, I sometimes may not be able to work because of the fact that I've been in the hospital. And so on the fourth try, I was able to get SSDI. I was working part-time at Walmart and CVS. And, you know, there'd be times where, you know, if I was sick, I would be, you know, at home. As I was, you know, working and as I'm home, you know, I'd be still gaining the income, the Social Security income. Once I got full-time at Walmart, I didn't get the SSDI because we felt that I didn't need to use it, and I told them. But the good thing is that I'm in the record. So if in case something happens to me, then I can go back and say, I need to reapply for my benefits. But here's the challenge. People who apply for SSDI, there are limitations to how much you can make on the job. And so what happens is you're hit with a letter. And recently I got a letter in my mail saying that we owe SS money.
Wow. I didn't know that happened.
Yeah.
Wow.
We were hit with a letter from SS saying that I need to pay them more than the amount that I make. So basically, I'm not talking about $1,000.
So does that happen to folks because they qualify for benefits, they're using them, then they get a little better, they recover, something changes in their circumstances, so they start working? And then SSDI comes back and says, oh, well, because you were working, you owe us money. Is that what's happening?
Well, yeah. On their side, they're claiming that we did not notify them that I'm full time. And so what's happening is they want me to pay them the money. What's happening is we requested that they waive that overpayment, because as you can see, an individual like me may not have that much money.
Uh-huh.
You have to really work hard. And as a disabled person, that's not easy to do. And we asked that they waive that overpayment, and they rejected that request.
Wow.
And so we are in the process of looking for a representative to fight my case.
Yeah. Oh, I just thought they knew somehow based on how it was set up in the system. I didn't know that every time something changed, you had to notify them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we talked to a representative from the administration, and we told them that, look, I will no longer need SSDI because I have already got full-time status.
Well, and that seems so illogical to me, because with disabilities, I mean, they're very rarely, in my opinion, they're very rarely consistent in how disabled you are, especially when we're talking about illnesses and stuff like that, right?
Right.
It fluctuates so much, and it depends on so many different things. When you have your insurance messed up, you know, sometimes your health goes down, or you don't get the medicine you need and you end up in a hospital or something happens. And so for it to be, that doesn't seem like a great system at all. But we already knew it wasn't a great system.
Right.
Well, and we haven't even touched on, you know, things like the marriage issue.
You know, that's a really good point, Tessa. As obviously you can see, I do not have a brother or sister. I was born only child. And yet I do think about that. And marriage does somewhat affect me as a disabled person. I do think about marriage, and I think about, like, what if I had gotten married, like, at the stage that I wanted to get married? How would that make a difference to my mm-hmm. family? I mean, would that help my family? Of course. Of course it mm-hmm. would. Would it help me? Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
As a disabled person, definitely. You would think that there are people out there who care, who would check up on you, but people who don't seem to care about us or treat us like second-class citizens, they just don't think that it's appropriate to look at the person and say, why don't I see how he's doing? Why don't I see how she's doing?
Yeah, I think, you know, just coming from, like, my personal friends and stuff who also have chronic illness. To be honest with you, I mean, as my chronic illnesses have progressed, having able-bodied friends has become more and more challenging, because it's really hard for them to understand when I cancel on them or when I, you know, can't do certain things. Like the other day, they went to a fair, and I can't do that, right? And so
yeah.
It makes it harder and harder to keep those connections. But I've noticed with disabled folks or chronically ill folks, it's easier to be able to talk about your medical conditions and the things that you need. And so I think that's kind of where that community component comes in, that you were talking about a little bit earlier with the network and diverse ability, which is where we met. Those things are so important, and they help us get through some of these hard times that you're going through.
Yeah. And you know, that's why I got myself involved with the network and with the DLC.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, kind of going back to the financial stuff too, I know on some of the support groups and stuff I've seen, there are times where folks are in a position kind of like yourself with SSDI, and where they're trying to appeal and get benefits, and they need a lawyer or they need representation. And those communities have those resources as well. People know people in those settings. So it is really invaluable. And I think in this time during this podcast, I think that's one of the biggest things I've learned is the value of community.
Exactly.
One thing that I like to ask folks, if you looked into the future, like, what is one thing that you would like to really see change? What would you like to see happen for yourself and the community?
Actually, there's so many things that I would like to see in the community. I would like to see more doctors talk about rare disability. Like, yours is a rare disability. Mine is a rare disability. I would like to see mm-hmm. more doctors get more engaged on CCHS and any additional rare disabilities that are not talked about as often.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I would like to see changed is the healthcare system. I think the healthcare quality really has to change. That's a few really big one. I'm not really sure how families in India are able to tolerate the healthcare system that is incorporated there. Like I said in the beginning, I prefer to have good healthcare here. I think especially the health insurance and social security portions, that has to really change. Finally, I think the accommodations and the accessibility really has to change.
Mm-hmm.
The flexibility, you know, employers need to be more understanding of our accommodations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they need to be more diverse, and they need to take this diversity and inclusion very seriously. You know, they say, we're all about inclusiveness and diversity and flexibility and accommodations, this and that. But when it comes to the real thing, it's like there's no inclusion. There's nothing. They just expect you to do their bidding.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't understand disabilities, or they have their own perceptions of what disability is.
And I'm hearing a lot of lawsuits against companies who have not been more accommodating. And also the other change that needs to happen is being able to take certain equipment with you to airports.
Okay, yeah.
Because when it comes to traveling, they require you to bring a doctor's note, and they want you to say why you should have this. And okay, so like one of the things that we bring with us is like a plastic box. And in that box, it has trach ties, Q-tips, tweezers, scissors. Now, for people who are on the TSA, they may think that we bring scissors because it's a sharp object, I guess. But what they don't understand is there is a specific use for that. We need those scissors because that's what helps cut the trach ties when it comes to changing the ties itself.
That's the tie that holds everything together and holds it on you. Okay.
Exactly.
I know the accommodation stuff at airports and everything is extremely difficult. And you know, it's not like you can just leave it in your check-on bag, because what if that bag is lost and you need those supplies now?
Right.
I think those are all very good points. And, yeah. You know, everything from a social aspect to the financial aspect and accommodations, and there's just always so much to be done. But thank you for talking about the insurance and the financial component of it.
I do think that a lot of work needs to be done. I think as a group, if we somehow came together to make some demands about the changes that need to be made, then that would really make a difference. We need to see more senators listen to us and take disability as part of the legislation.
More representation and more political movement. Yeah.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for shedding light on some of these topics. They haven't been covered this season, and I really appreciate you sharing your personal stories with us.
I did want to ask you a question.
Yeah.
How did you come up with the name NeoAbilities or the Danny Project?
Yeah, so the Danny Project was created I had a aunt who had Down syndrome, and uh-huh. who was named Danielle. I was named after her, and she passed in 2019. Uh-huh. And so it's named after that, and it's the acronym. So disability, accessibility, inclusion, and then knowledge. So that was where that came from, and just trying to elevate all of those different facets in the acronym. And then NeoAbilities is, Neo means new. So the tagline is disabilities reimagined. So reframing what disability means in our society. So I think a lot of the problems that I've identified in the work that I do is a value thing, uh-huh. right? And we don't value people with disabilities. And so therefore we don't invest in resources, and we don't listen to them, and we don't learn about cultures and language from that community. And so I spend a lot of time talking about value and a lot of time addressing that, especially with social workers and with the social sector.
That's an interesting name for the project. That's a really good way to remember her, because of the fact that she had Down syndrome. That's very good.
Yeah. So if people want to reach out to you, I mean, you're talking about community and stuff, and if people want to reach out to you or follow you, where should they go?
Sure. If you're listening, my name is Jay Trovedi. That's J-A-Y, last name T-R-I-V-E-D-I. You can follow me on Facebook with my name, J-T-R-I-V-E-D-I-77. That's my Facebook site. Or you can just find me on Facebook with Jay Trovedi. And you can also find me on Instagram. Just type in jt.trovedi. And I'm also available on LinkedIn. And also, you can follow me on Clubhouse. I'm in the Clubhouse discussions. I'm always happy to do any rooms on the side and the back channel. I'm in part of like gratitude rooms, inclusion rooms, disabled rooms, where we talk about being able to travel with a disability, mental health, ableism, you name inclusion, you name it. And you can see me on future speaking opportunities. I've done some in the past. And I have to say, I'm really grateful for the fact that I get to be represented by the hosts of this outstanding and outgoing and outperforming podcast host. Thank you, Tessa, so much for everything.
Thank you.
And one thing I do want to touch base on is I do advocate, but one of the things that I like to do is I like to keep in touch with CCHS families. I like to check in to see how they're doing because it gives me a idea of what kind of feedback to provide in case they have a question about something. So for example, a family in the UK reached out to me and asked me about what kind of settings do you have on your ventilator. And fortunately, I had the information with me when I had my respiratory nurse come. She had all that information and I was able to send it off to the UK family. And so those are the types of things I like to do for advocacy. I had so much fun on the podcast, Tessa. I had so much fun talking about disabilities, all the changes that for the future. And I had so much fun talking about my advocacy.
Awesome. Well, thank you everyone for tuning into today's episode. And thank you so much, Jay. I had a wonderful time talking with you.
Thank you, Tessa.
Well, Earthlings, that's it for today's broadcast. As Carl Sagan once said, somewhere something incredible is waiting to be known. Thank you so much for tuning in this week, and I hope to see you next week. Be sure to check us out on social media at New Abilities Everywhere, and use the hashtag TheDannyProject to continue these important discussions around disability. You can also join the crew on Patreon for more exclusive content. Until next time, peace out.
One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.